that again.
Yeah. This is Representative Mark Olson. I will call the March 27th local government meeting to order. Welcome to the committee. Apologize for those technical difficulties. We do have a quorum. And Representative Poppy, would you like to move the minutes?
I sure would. I will move the minutes.
Representative Poppy moves approval of the March 23rd minutes. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the minutes for March 23rd are approved. Thank you. The first bill we have on the agenda, members, is House Bill 3380 with Representative Biskins. And we have a fairly full agenda. I'll just note that we have meeting time tonight if we're not able to get done today. Or this morning, and also we have some additional discussions to complete our annexation report to the Government Operations Committee that may occur tonight, depending on some discussions that are going on right now. And I'll fill you in more on that later, but I wanted to highlight it now so we don't forget.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Holbrook.
What room do we have reserved?
Same room, room 10. Thank you. Thank you for that question. The chair will move that House Bill 3380 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the State Government Finance Committee. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, there is also in your packet an A2 amendment that is my amendment, and it's just some clarifying language. I think if I could have you move that to get the bill in the shape, I'd like to speak to it.
Okay, the chair will move adoption of the A2 amendment to get the bill in the order the author would like. Any discussion of that motion? Seeing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. The bill is now in the order the author would like.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, House File 3380 addresses an issue that has been brewing under the surface for quite some time. We have a policy in the state of Minnesota, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, where local units of government, including school districts, have been allowed to offer post-retirement benefits to their employees and not fund those post-retirement benefits. For example, earlier in the last century, probably in the 70s, 80s, or early 90s, healthcare was a pretty cheap commodity. There were many times where an employer would say to an employee, say, I can't offer you a $3,000 raise right now, but I can offer to pay for your retirement benefits, health benefits after you retire until age 65 or 67. And at the time, that was probably a benefit worth about $3,000. Well, that benefit has now exploded to be worth about $80,000. And this is the local units of government have no way of creating trusts which would allow them to set up a cash flow to fund this account, and it's been on a pay-as-you-go system. This bill would allow local units of government to create just such trusts. The estimated liabilities statewide from local units of government are anywhere between $3 and $6 billion right now. It's something you need to get a handle on immediately, and this bill gives a tool. It's not a cure-all, Mr. Chairman, but it is a tool where local units of government can start addressing this issue, and I'd appreciate your support. Mr. Chairman, this bill has been brought to me by the state auditor, and at this time, if it be your pleasure, I'll turn the microphone over to her.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This has come to our attention in the last couple of years. There's a new GASB, that's the Government Standing, Accounting Standards Board. There's a new GASB requirement that local units, or that governments, essentially figure out the cost, the actuarial value of these post-retirement benefits, and they start putting them on their books, essentially. It started in 2007. This is generally a local government problem. There's a little bit at the state level, but mostly it's school districts, frankly. We don't have a full estimate, but it's I believe that it's going to be probably about $5 billion in liability. And that's a huge amount of money. So this bill, essentially, is a bipartisan bill. If you've been following the Duluth situation, that's the one that's been in the paper the most. They have about $300 million, just the city of Duluth alone, in liability. So this is a big issue. It's going to be a very public issue down the road. About 75% of the school districts, we estimate, have this problem. And this allows local units of government the ability to start putting money away, essentially. And they need to, if you're in a situation like the Duluth of the world, you're going to have to do that because it could affect your bond rating down the road if you're not funding this. So this does allow that. We've set it up so that the money is invested, the State Board of Investment, just like the pension funds currently, and it goes through PARA, very low cost, and very good investment returns. I'd appreciate your support on the bill. And I can answer lots of questions. I do have Mary Vanek from PARA is here and Howard Bickers from the State Board of Investment, and they are supportive of this, and they're ready to take it on.
Okay. Representative Biskins, do you want to take questions now?
It would be your pleasure, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Questions for the author or Auditor Anderson? Representative Hornstein.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. It's not a question, just to thank Representative Biskins for bringing this forward. This is really common sense, but it is needed. And State Auditor, to you, really, I think, laid out a very good future vision scenario for why we need to get behind this. So thank both of you.
Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was able to hear this bill already in GovOps, and it's an excellent bill. So I encourage everyone to vote yes.
Any other thoughts? Okay. We have those in opposed to the bill yet, so why don't we do that before we go to amendments?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Bissett.
Mr. Chairman, I think that, and they can speak for themselves, but those who are opposed, that you have listed as opposed to the bill, are not necessarily opposed to the bill as much as they are in support of Representative Peterson's amendment. So this might be the right time to bring forward Representative Peterson's amendment, have the proponents speak to why they think it's a good thing, and then we'll speak after.
Okay. While we go to that, why don't I also call their names? We have Sandy Nguyen. Hope I pronounced that correct. And Aaron Casper. Why don't you come forward, sir? And Representative Peterson.
Chairman, thank you. I'd like to offer the A3 amendment.
Representative Peterson moves the A3 amendment be adopted.
Mr. Chairman, what this amendment does, basically it inserts words appropriately on the two pages that would allow a bank with trust powers to become the depository on these funds. As was testified right now, the bill says that the State Board of Investments is the only depository for these funds and the trust that go with them. I was brought this amendment in Government Operations Committee. I did not offer it at that time because I knew that there was a lot of discussion going on between the Auditor's Office and the financial institutions. And I felt that because there's enough angst over this topic that we needed to hear it, and so I was bringing this amendment. I can go through the details and you can see where it needs to be inserted, but I think there's going to be a lot of discussion from both the banks and from the auditor as to their reasoning for supporting private business as a depository, and from the auditor for controlling this funding. We'll offer the amendment, sir.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the records, please, and
go ahead.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Joe Witt. I'm President and CEO of the Minnesota Bankers Association. I would speak in favor of the amendment. I think the representative making the offering the amendment has done an excellent job of explaining our position on this. as the bill is currently written, there is only one place to deposit these funds, and we think that the banks that have trust powers in the state of Minnesota should also be alternatives for the local units of government to invest their money. Minnesota has roughly 45 banks with trust powers or standalone trust companies, and ranging from very small operations up to larger ones, and we think that they should also have at least the opportunity to bid on and receive that business.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, please, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Aaron Casper. I represent not only myself as a taxpayer in Minnesota, but also the organization I work for, National Insurance Services. I, too, would be in support of Representative Biskin's proposal, with one exception, that in addition to including banking institutions as an option for holding funds, they'd also include U.S. insurance companies. The reason I state that is because I personally have been involved in assisting school districts throughout the state, whether they're the largest school district in the state down to one of the smallest, with this very issue of GASB 45. There are several districts out there that have been on the forefront of implementing early the GASB 45 statement, and have such, and I know this would be contrary to the state auditor, and with all due respect to her, there seems to be a question as to whether or not it would be illegal, it would be legal for a public institution to establish a trust. I would say this, that there are trusts out there, irrevocable trusts, that meet the GASB 45 standard that are in existence today. Now, those and funds have already been deposited for their GASB 45, other post-employment benefit liabilities, in an attempt to get out in front of this impending financial storm. Now, in addition to that, I would be, again, in support of Representative Biskin's amendment if it did include insurance companies, but I think there are a lot of things that really need to be considered with this bill that seems they haven't been considered. Specifically, it comes down to the option as well. Right now, the bill proposes a mandatory PERA option. Well, there are other private institutions that not only can provide the trust itself, but also the benefit of providing private sector expertise in guiding those districts, whether it be Minnesota school districts, cities, and/or counties, through the process of navigating GASB 45 and the funding for that. The funding for GASB 45 is not mandatory. So those entities are really going to have an individual choice on whether or not they want to do that. And one of my biggest proponents is for choice, so that those individual entities do have a choice when it comes down to whether or not they want to establish a trust and or go through with the funding. So at this point, I would just open up for questions.
We have one more person to testify. Ms. Schwab? Welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record, please, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Grace Schwab, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We have been involved with the state auditor in this process probably starting this summer. Always, as school districts, we knew this was coming and trying to look for ways to help our members face this challenge. As we've gone forward, I want to thank Representative Peterson for bringing this amendment. I was with 200 school board members this morning, and this is what they feel would let them approach this with the right amount of local control. A lot of school districts have friendships built with local bankers across the state of Minnesota and feel comfortable with that approach. I also would like to bring to the committee's attention that no other state in the nation has knocked the private sector out of providing this service for local units of government. So Minnesota would be the first to ban the private sector out of this. Also, the auditor, as we worked this summer with her office, presented in one of her drafts to us this very option. So it's not something new there. It was presented to us, and it was the last one presented, so I assumed wrongly that that was what we were actually going to see in legislation as that moves forward. We were very happy. As long as it just provides some local flexibility, and this with this amendment it does, and we could support this bill with the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Questions from members?
Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is actually to the author. One of the previous testifiers stated that there are currently trust accounts currently with banks. What would happen to those in the event that this passed without this amendment?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Vistance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hilstrom. If those accounts do indeed exist, that there is an opinion by our Attorney General that they are illegal. Mm-hmm. Those local units of government have no power to create such trusts in law right now, and that's why we're bringing forth this language. There was an assumption by some local units of government that they can, but there's an Attorney General's opinion that they cannot create these trusts as of this time.
Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Auditor Iwata. Anderson, sorry. Can you explain to me why you had, as part of your proposal, the ability to do private banks? Previously, we heard from a testifier, and that now it's not included?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Auditor Anderson.
Mr. Chair, first of all, we didn't start meeting with anyone until December. We sat down with the local units of government that we had essentially a committee, and we talked about the issue. We wrote several different drafts of language, our staff did, but the one that did have it in, we told them through email that we were opposed to that, but we did draft several different things. So this has gone through many, and that was at their request, but we did tell them we were opposed to it.
Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Chair. Why are you opposed to private banks providing this service?
Auditor Anderson.
Mr. Chair, this is... There's a variety. First of all, very few states have actually passed this, so she probably is correct, but a few states have passed a law in this case. They do allow trust to occur, but I think there's very few that have actually passed any law regarding this. I think it's a handful of states. There's a variety of reasons. Right now, local units of government can only invest in essentially bonds and a few other things. So the state has prescribed that they have a very low risk level for any sort of cash that they have. By opening up and allowing them to invest in trusts, it through essentially the State Board of Investment, allows them to buy stocks, alternative investments, really have a much higher risk level for the taxpayer money, which is essentially going into these funds. They need trust. I think they do need to get a higher rate of return. If it's a Duluth situation alone, if they can go from currently, they can just buy bonds, but if they can go into the State Board of Investment fund, they'll knock about $100 million off their liability. So, because it's a 30-year liability. So over time, this will save a ton of money by allowing this to happen. We all are well aware that there are other pension funds out there in the state. There's about 700 fire relief associations that have their own funding. There's Minneapolis Teachers. There's MRF. There's other funds. And they underperform the State Board of Investment by about 2 percentage points. We just handed out a sheet. This gives you your numbers. If you look at the the one that says potential OPEB funding, the State Board through PARA has about 0.26 or 0.25 costs overall. That is very, very, very low cost to invest, and that 7.7 is their return. Any private sector investment, the costs are going to be considerably higher. We're using the 2% number, and they're going to have a lower rate of return. We have taken these numbers directly from what occurs across the state of Minnesota with the fire relief associations. You can see over 30 years, it has a dramatic effect on the dollar amount that will be in the end. If you invest through PARA and use the State Board of Investments, it's up to 3 times more in the end, the dollar amount. So it's extremely important to me that this money goes through PARA. Right now you have the local units of government send their pension fund money right to PARA. And this, I believe this should occur the same way, rather than having essentially setting up another 700 little pension funds out there that will have the same problem, I think, that our fire relief do in our other pension funds. So it would be just creating a mess, I believe.
Representative
Biskins,
mm-hmm. At this point?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm a little conflicted here, right, you know, on two realms. Number one is the issue of local control. I believe strongly in that. And number two, anytime we can give competition to government, I think normally that's a good thing. However, I would ask you to proceed very thoughtfully on this amendment, and the reason I'd ask you to think long and deep about it, I can sum up in three words: Minneapolis teachers' mm-hmm. pensions. And you know, we could be facing that same situation down the road. So I'd ask you to be thoughtful. If this amendment goes on, I'll still gladly carry this bill forward. Again, I think we need to move. This is a big issue that Representative Peterson has brought forward.
Further discussion? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Biskin, it says in Subdivision 3 exclusivity that critical subdivision may not establish a trust or equivalent arrangement, but I just heard testimony from Auditor Anderson that they can't do it anyway.
Right.
So, if they can't do it, why do you got to put it in the bill?
Mr. Chairman, can I defer that to the state auditor?
I'll defer it to my legal staff.
I will then defer it to the...
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, please, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Carla Heil, Deputy State Auditor. The reason that we put exclusivity, first of all, it's the exclusivity that there will not be any other trusts, that the intent is that it is created just for SBI and PARA. To the extent that the trusts were created without statutory authority, they're already void. This language does not affect those. They're void because they had no legal authority to be created. And this language is just to clarify that this is the only place, as Auditor Anderson said, the cost effectiveness, the rate of returns, and the oversight, the intent is that this is the only way new trust can be created is through the PARA SBI mechanism.
Ms. Pilot, am I understanding you correctly to say that you're basically taking the Attorney General's opinion and putting it in statute? Or clarifying that in statute?
Correct.
Okay. Representative Anderson?
So, Mr. Chair, Auditor Anderson, I didn't catch the lady's name. So the amendment that we're talking about here, including a bank, by putting that on, it would then include a bank being able to do that. And is there a danger of that someone, other entity might come and ask for the same opportunity to be put in statute also?
Auditor Anderson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, you already have that situation. The insurance companies want in on the deal. And that was one of the testifiers was here that spoke about that. They already have that situation. This is a lot of money. It's a lot of money. And so I can understand why the private sector, you know, would want in. And it is unusual that me as a conservative am opposed to the private sector. But the more responsible position is to have this money invested through the State Board of Investment. Otherwise, you're going to have me out there trying to find all these trusts, auditing all these trusts, writing up school districts and writing up local units of government for poor investment performance. You're going to have school boards start picking stocks through the banks, and that's not what you want. That has created a big problem across the state of Minnesota in our fire relief and in our independent pension funds. And down the road, you'll be bailing these guys out too. And I think it's just a bad position. The state board has proven performance. It's one fund. There's currently a relationship with PARA right now with the local units of government. They send their pension money to PARA, and PARA invests the money to the state board. And so it exists. It is a very clean process to do it this way. Otherwise, you're going to set up essentially another 700 or more little pension fund equivalents across the state.
Of
Mr. Chair, I just, you know, from what Auditor Anderson just said, I'd like to see, to hear what the opposition is, what the opposition who they're supporting the amendment, what they would say to that statement that to the auditor. But there's other questions here, so.
Mr. Casper, did you want to address that?
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, member of this committee. With all due respect to Auditor Anderson, to compare the Minneapolis public schools situation relative to their pension and GASB OPEB 45 funding, it's like an apple in a car. Number one, with pension funding, it's mandatory, all right? And it does go through the State Board of Investment, and they do set up that automatic percentage that comes right off the top. When you're talking about GASB 45 funding, you're dealing with very much an individual choice issue going down to the very specific school district, city, or county. Now, they vary in size, so it's going to be very different depending on their cash flows and a number of different things, their actuarial valuation that they receive. So it's not automatic. Whether or not an entity may or may not want to establish an irrevocable trust for such a purpose is completely unique to that individual entity. So they are totally different. Now, the things that I heard also is that we're dealing with rates of return, etc. It's in the best interest of that entity to receive the highest discount rate or the highest rate of return that they can receive. Now, I'm not opposed to opening it up to variable investment options, but to say that the PERA is the only way to go and we're going to be the cheapest and we're going to achieve the highest rate of return, I don't know about you, but I don't have a crystal ball. I think that the private sector is also well positioned to be able to offer an opportunity for those individual entities out there, school districts included, to choose. Let market forces dictate on whether or not an entity decides to go through PERA for their funding if they so choose to fund for GASB 45 purposes, or if they go ahead and use U.S. Bank, Wells Fargo, ING, or AIG for that matter. So that's all I would say to that.
Mr. Witt? Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just add, too, that the financial institutions that we're talking about here, the trust departments, are regulated financial institutions, so their safety and soundness is something that's regulated, as well as their investment activities and portfolios. So I think the fact that we are dealing with such heavily regulated institutions with respect to the investments, I think that adds a great deal of comfort as well.
Further questions? Okay, thank you. Any? Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious what happens with these trusts that have been set up that you say are illegal. What are you going to do about it, or what happens to them? Or
Senator Anderson.
Representative Holberg, they're illegal. They don't have the authority to do that. There's a few school districts that went out and did it. And this goes to my exact point. If this amendment is allowed to pass, you're going to have this sort of situation all over the state. And how am I going to find out who's got trust, where the money is, if they've set it up legally, etc.? So this money has to get pulled back. I think they started about this summer or last year in some cases.
So,
again, what's going to be the process to deal with these ones that have been set up? Are they going to be dissolved? Are they going to be allowed to continue? Or they have to give the money back?
Representative Holberg, that is always a problem when a local unit of government acts without authorization. How do you undo an unauthorized act? So the question is out there, and it is not resolved.
Representative Peterson.
I've had a chance to think about this quite a bit, and as I've heard testimony, I think it's beneficial that we've talked about it. But I think the two things that stand out to me are the fact that we need to control behavior. And historically, some of these funds have not behaved very well. And part of the dilemma, I think, with individual trust accounts is that they many times are made as instructed. Where you put your money with PIRA, they're not asking for anybody's opinion, they're just investing. If I go to a trust account, I suppose I could influence that trust. And sometimes we'd do a good job and sometimes we'd do a bad job. I think there's also the question of the fiduciary of public trust. And that armor has been chinked by the performance. I am convinced now that the recommendation that's being made is a correct recommendation. I think we need to get our arms around this issue. And as much as I know that the banks and the insurance companies would like a piece of this business, I think we as a public body, as decision makers, need to do what is best for the public trust in an area that has not demonstrated good behavior. I am therefore, I think it would be best if I would pull my Amendment A3 off the docket.
Okay.
And I am prepared to vote for the recommendation of Representative Biscuits.
Representative Peterson withdraws his motion to adopt the A3 amendment.
Thank you.
Auditor Anderson.
Thank you, Representative Peterson, Mr. Chair. I'll just want to point out the reason that we set up PARA in the first place is because we had all these little pension funds at one point all over the state. Essentially, every city had their own little PARA, and that would be, you know, if the amendment still existed, that's what you would be creating. One other point is that the state board outperforms 94% of the fire reliefs and the other pension funds in the state of Minnesota.
Further discussion of the bill. Representative Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, I was hoping that we could have a vote on that amendment. I was waiting to see because I hear some conversation here that some people are for and some people are against it. So I pick up the amendment and re-entertain it just to get some kind of idea of what a committee actually sensing about this amendment. I have bankers that have come to ask me about this and to get some kind of a feel as to where the committee stands. And I don't think the amendment was brought up in GovOps at the time and discussed. It's good to discuss it now. So I re-entertain Representative Peterson's amendment just to see what kind of flavor we get from the committee as to their concerns about it, whether the bankers have said, have come forward and would like to see their opportunity to be heard on the issue and hear from more of the members of our committee on it.
Representative Anderson moves the A3 amendment.
I do.
To be adopted. Discussion. Representative Wardlow.
I think both Representative Peterson's comments and the comments of Representative Biscuits, who I agreed with completely because I'm firmly for local control and private enterprise, but I think I'd be opposed to this amendment because I think the comments I've heard to the contrary are correct.
Further discussion? Seeing no further discussion. All those in favor of the Anderson motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. May see that again on the floor, it sounds like. To the bill as amended. Any further discussion to the bill as amended? Seeing none, all those the chair will renew his motion that House Bill 3380 be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to the State Government Finance Committee. Any further discussion? All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The bill passes amended and be re-referred to State Government Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you, Representative Biscuits and Auditor Anderson. And all of you who testified. Next on the agenda, House Bill 3391. Representative Beard.
Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members.
The chair will move House Bill 3391, be recommended to pass, and be sent to the General Register.
All right.
And is this your amendment?
It is, Mr. Chairman.
Amendment. I will move the DE1 amendment. Is that correct, Representative Beard?
It is.
To get it in the order you'd like.
Please. Yes.
Okay. I will move the DE1 amendment to get it in the order the author would like. Any discussion, questions? All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted. Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for adopting the DE1 amendment. Several weeks ago, I agreed to carry this bill for our friends at the Builders Association regarding extending the 60-day rule, which the legislature has applied to several different permit application processes and different levels of government. The originally extended, we're proposing to extend that 60-day rule to building permits and local environmental reviews. After some input from our friends at the League of Minnesota Cities, Association of Metropolitan Counties, the Realtors, and some other folks, the Senate actually took this bill up and passed what you're looking at in the DE1 amendment and tempered it back a little bit in its reach and its scope. And so now it includes watershed district review and soil and water conservation district reviews. We dropped the request that commercial building permits be involved and that cities and governmental units had a 3-day window to deny a permit in writing. We dropped those because they were a little more contentious and needed to be worked through. So what we have here is a consensus delete all amendment where we have some sign-off from the different entities that represent the governmental units that have to labor under the regulation we're about to pass, I hope. And I guess that's what I can tell you about the nature of the bill and where it's been to this point. Mr. Chairman, with me today, I do have Ms. Remy Stone from the Builders Association, who is happy to talk a little more about the bill and stand for some questions if you wish.
Please state your name for the committee and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Remy Stone with the Builders Association of the Twin Cities. The Delete Everything Amendment is a product of work with the League of Minnesota Cities, the EQB, and other folks. I have to admit that our grant scheme has been pared down significantly. Nevertheless, this does address one of our two points in here, which is to make sure that local environment permits, not EQB, not EISs, anything like that, that those local approvals are fitting within the 60-day rule.
Questions from members? Is there anyone who wishes to testify against the bill? Hearing none, all those in favor of the bill? Who made the motion? Excuse me. Representative Olson, who's not here, can he renew his motion when he's not in the room?
He's here.
Oh, great. Representative Olson renews his motion that House File 3391 be recommended to pass and sent to
the General
Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam
Thank
Chair.
You.
Member
no, Madam Chair. Maybe you should chair this committee a little more often.
I'd be happy to do that. The next bill on the agenda is House File 3876, Representative Finstead.
Still have 2 minutes or less.
Would someone like to move this bill?
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to move approval of House File 3876 and recommend it to be sent to the General Register.
Madam Chair, in the Senate, I went to the consent calendar, but whatever the motion is, I'd be happy with.
I'd be happy to move it to the consent calendar.
Okay. House File 3876 is moved by Representative Holberg to be sent to the consent calendar. Representative Finstead, please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Brad Finstead, District 21B, New Ulm. Madam Chair, members of the committee, this bill is quick and easy, but yet very important to the folks of Brown County. Currently, the state statute says that the county can pay for up to $3,500 a year
towards the county expenditures associated with the Soldier's Rest. So a plot for a soldier's gravesite and then also a family member. In Brown County, we are the only county in the state and quite possibly one of the only counties in the nation that actively does this. And as you know, we have a aging population of veterans, and specifically in Brown County, there's quite a demand. I have with me a letter from the Brown County Veteran Services Service Officer. I just want to read a little chunk of it because I think it's a well-written letter that really, really puts everything into perspective with this bill. Towering over New Ulm Cemetery stands the proud, life-size bronze replica of a World War I soldier. The rifle is clutched in his left hand and his right hand is raised as he tosses a grenade, locally known as the Doughboy. He keeps watch over comrades who served together and have chosen to remain together in eternal peace in a uniquely special cemetery called Soldier's Rest. Brown County is the only county in the state and believed to be the only county in our great nation that purchases and provides burial plots to our veterans and their spouses. We have soldier rest sections in three cities' cemeteries in Brown County. This is made possible through the statute that we are discussing today and the generosity of our taxpayers. Private Henry Meyer, a doughboy himself, was laid to rest in grave number one on October 15, 1946. Mrs. Frances Rieger, a 53-year-old spouse, was laid to rest last week. Her burial marks the 798th plot purchased by Brown County. Think of the burden that would have been placed on Fort Snelling or Camp Ripley if Brown County did not provide for our own. In essence, burial plots are real estate, and real estate costs, especially in cemeteries, never go down, rather they go up. And Brown County plot costs are up over 220% in the past 4 years. $3,500 bought 14 plots in 2002, and only 9 plots last year, and currently 6 plots. Last year, we lost 46 veterans, with one-third choosing to use a Soldier's Rest plot in Brown County. 15 spouse plots were reserved as well. To date, we have lost 18 veterans, with half choosing Soldier's Rest. The Veterans Administration predicts a peak in deaths by 2008. In Brown County, a veteran service officer believes that we've already taken steps towards that steep climb. And members, that really is the summary of why I'm before you today, and I promised the committee administrator that I would only take 2 minutes. I'm a little bit over that, so I apologize. I would stand for questions, and I do appreciate your support.
Representative Finstead, I have a problem with that, too, because I sit back in the chair, and the bill takes longer, and the members think it's because of me. But it isn't, Representative Holbert.
Mr. Chair, if there's no questions, I'll renew my motion that House File 3876 be recommended to pass and referred to the consent agenda.
Any discussion to that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the Holbert motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The bill is passed and will be placed on the consent calendar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Finstead. We have neither Representative Erdahl or Representative Hornstein pulled his bill, I understood.
Yeah.
Is that correct,
Mr. Chair and members, yeah, we're still waiting some discussion at the Minneapolis City Council, so hopefully you'll see this bill later in the session.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Hornstein. While we're waiting, members, our annexation work, have any of you gotten copies of the annexation language? Do you have them here? We could hand them out now if anybody wants them. We have some here.
We have enough for everybody.
But all of our work was now whittled down to 8 pages after we got rid of the extra language. And it's a little easier to see what our work was. There is still remains concerns with the townships. Those of you who were here, there was one provision in particular that the townships were very strongly against, and as Representative Markwert noted, maybe we're looking at a double standard on things with regard to speaking with regards to not accepting provisions that were strongly opposed from either side. So that's one of the rubs that they have, and I'm encouraging them to work to see if we can't come up with something yet to bring them on board at the same level the cities are. And the goal is to see if we can't get something by tomorrow night to present to government operations. We're keeping tonight's meeting time available. If we get an agreement this afternoon, we'll all come back here and discuss what they come up with, do a straw poll, so to speak, and be able to go to the government operations meeting tomorrow night with a sense for how this committee would respond to the amendment we would introduce then, if there's an agreement between both sides. If not, we're going to present it as it is and just see where it goes.
Ready to go.
Representative Mullery, let's go. We're ready. Filling in time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize,
Chair. I'd like to move House File 3887.
Representative Hornstein moves that House File 3887 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Government Operations Committee. Is that correct, Representative Mulgrew? You going to go up?
I'm not sure that if it has, does it have to go there?
Well, that's what I have on my agenda here, that it needs to go to GovOps.
Okay.
Task force created, usually has to go to GovOps.
Okay. Well, this is a task force, not a state task force. So
we'll leave it there for now, and I'll check with the administrator, but I believe it does.
We can check with somebody else.
Before we actually vote on it. Representative Mulery, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to add on the sunset, the 2009, December 31st, 2009, paid line 2.15.
Representative Mulery, you're on page 2.
Line 15.
And you want to add what?
It says 20 dot dot. It would be 2009.
Okay. Representative Hornstein moves the amendment on page 2, House File 3887, on line 15, to add the numbers 09 for 2009. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And what this is about is the Victory Memorial Drive was a drive created, a boulevard created back in about 1921 to commemorate all of the dead soldiers from World War One who had lived in Hennepin County. And it has existed since then. There was either a cross or a Star of David if they were dependent on, I think actually every one of them did belong to either Christian or Jewish religion. And there was, each tree was designated with one of these. And the drive, there's a memorial and other things on it, and we're trying to develop develop a commission to preserve it and add features to it. I believe it was 2 years ago, this body made it a state historic district, and Mr. Ouellette from the city is here to explain the rest of the bill.
Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Gail Ouellette with the City of Minneapolis. Don't have too much to add. Just recall that, as the representative said, in 03, the state gave this resource historic status. We're now seeking kind of the second piece of this, which would be to create this historic task force. We would work on the implementation and the restoration. This is a reason we are here asking for this. Is a multi-jurisdictional effort with the Historical Society, Hennepin County, City of Robbinsdale, City of Minneapolis, and the Minneapolis Park Board. So it's a multi-jurisdictional group. Hopefully we will be able to attain some national historic status and figure out an implementation plan for this resource. Not only are the markers in difficult shape, the infrastructure in the park surrounding it is also is in great need of repair. So we're coming forward with this small bill to help put that group together and give it some legislative weight to its importance.
Thank you. Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a quick question. Your citizen representative and your veterans organization representatives, you say appointed by the chair. Is that the chair of the, of Hennepin County, or is it the chair of the commission?
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, that's correct. The Hennepin County Chair. This is the Hennepin County War Memorial, and that's why we believe they should be in the chair position of this effort.
Representative Holberg, anything else?
I just wasn't clear to me which chair it was. So.
Thank you. Mr. Any further questions?
Oh, I was just going to explain, Representative Holberg, there is a veterans organization that presents ceremonies on Memorial Day along the drive, and I would expect that they would, they work closely with the park board and everything on issues with regard to this victory drive, so I would expect that they
would. I just didn't say the chair of Hennepin County Board. This was appointed by the chair, and I wasn't sure which chair, if it was the chair of actually the organization that you're forming or the chair of the Hennepin County Board. It's not delineated in your bill.
Thank you.
Further questions, members? Okay. Then Representative Hornstein renews his motion that House File 3887 be re-referred to Governmental Operations as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda is House File 3779, Representative Erdahl.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move approval of House File 3779, and it would be referred to the General Register. I see a DE1 amendment. Representative Erdahl, would you like me to move the DE1 amendment as well?
Would you please?
So moved.
Representative Holberg moves House File 3779 be recommended to pass and move to the General Register, and also moves the DE1 amendment. Members, this amendment did not meet the 24-hour rule. However, if there's no objections, we will consider the DE1 amendment. Okay. Representative Erdahl, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. Various thoughts in proposing this. Basically, we're looking at trying to curtail the establishment of live adult entertainment enterprises, particularly in rural Minnesota. Senator Dill is the author in the Senate with this bill. I had thought that we just declare them all feedlots, and I'd shut them down for sure. That's an ag committee joke. Come on, guys.
Wow. Too many city people here.
But establishment of businesses which provide live performances of sexually oriented entertainment has blighted many of our small rural towns and other sized populations as well. Operators have misled government authorities about the purpose of these proposed businesses, and then once established, these businesses are very difficult and costly to remove. Also, adult live sex-oriented performances have a collateral effect, prostitution, drugs, that is damaging to communities. This bill actually is up at about the same time, at least it was supposed to be, in the Senate, and I fear that my testifiers are all with Senator Dill. I had the police chief, the mayor, and the city clerk of the city of Eden Valley with me today, which has been blessed with a gentleman's club, and this bill comes from their concerns. Questions?
Representative Sharon.
Representative Erdahl, would this also curtail this type of entertainment on boats?
Representative Erdahl.
I'm going to say whatever floats your boat, but well, this, no, I don't imagine that the other laws would take care of that.
Okay, we have the DE1 before us, correct?
Yes.
It's not yet adopted, so we're discussing the DE1 amendment. Representative Paymar.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering, Representative Erdahl, if you thought about constitutional challenges to your bill.
Yes.
That's a good thing, Mark.
Maybe you'd like to share some of those thoughts.
Representative Erdahl.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Tamar. It's one of the reasons why if you have the original bill.
Yes, we do.
Well, one of the reasons why we have the Ludall amendment before us is that I was concerned about constitutional challenges. Basically, all this amendment is saying is that if you wish to establish a business of this type, a sexual-oriented live performance business, you should tell the government entity 60 days ahead of time. Similar pieces of legislation have been successful in the state of Delaware. Senator Dill's bill is much more inclusive and includes a lot of the Delaware language. But yes, Representative Piemar, we have considered constitutional questions, and we believe that asking them to 2 months ahead of time say what their business is, what they intend to do, is proper.
Mr. Piemar. So what do you hope to accomplish by doing this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Piemar, give the governmental entity, city council, town board, whatever it is, time to react if they wish to this. If they wanted to change an ordinance, maybe they wanted to make it more inclusive and invite them in. I mean, there are actually towns in Minnesota that have changed their ordinances to make it more permissive because they wanted the business. But this would allow for some statutory changes within the governmental unit if they so desired. But you see, in Eden Valley, the city council believes that they were falsely led to believe that this was a canvas fabricating enterprise that was coming in. And it wasn't quite what they got.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erdahl, I just want to share with you some information related to this issue in my city along the lines of what Representative Piemar may be asking, because I think, you know, I'm going to support this and more power to you, but I don't know that you will be able to get through the Constitution on this, and I'll tell you, when I was on our city council, and I don't think Representative Peterson was the mayor at this time. I can't recall. We were on the council together. Anyway, there was a topless car wash that wanted to come to Bloomington. So, luckily, we heard about it before they made application. Now, the law is if you've made application, you can't zone them out. And I think you're trying to get at that because you can't. The federal constitution has found that you cannot deny these facilities, and you can zone for them, but you cannot zone them out. So you have to provide a zoning district for them within your community. And so when Bloomington heard about this, had this entity already formally made application, we could have done nothing to stop them. Because they had not yet made application, I think that's what you're drafting here, is you kind of have to tell us before you apply. We couldn't have stopped them, but because we did, we were able to immediately place a moratorium across the city and study sexually oriented businesses. We had this big task force come back and report to us, and we zoned for sexually oriented businesses in Bloomington. So we were able to stop anything that came in before it got there, effectively keeping the Mall of America from being full of strip joints or whatever might have happened in the community. What we had to do is find zoning that would not be violating the Constitution. So we actually found industrial parks, feedlots for you maybe, industrial parks in the city that were not on our 494 corridor that you could move into if you wanted to, and you had to be this much distance from churches and schools and houses and whatever. And so there are actually zones within the city of Bloomington that a sexually oriented business could come into. They're very undesirable because they're not in the retail and heavily populated areas, and they're kind of all tucked away, so effectively it's unlikely it would ever happen. But
we had to go through this whole process to really understand the law, and I think Representative Paymar is hitting on something significant, that you can't deny under the federal constitution the ability for these facilities to come into a community. It's uh-huh. been repeatedly found by the United States Supreme Court that it's freedom of speech, freedom of expression, whatever. So what I'm asking in your bill is, the way I'm reading it, it's sort of tagging on. You're saying if some other community already has them, then we don't have to have them. And I think that effectively becomes a problem for the St. Clouds and the Minneapolis and the St. Pauls and the other communities that may be trying to get rid of them through non-conforming uses. Wouldn't there be an incentive then for the surrounding communities who are beneficiaries under your bill, you know, being able to say, well, if these people 50 miles away have it, we don't have to. If they get rid of it, don't you then have to Indian Valley take it? And so, I mean, have you thought through kind of how you might have an intercity battle going on down the road if this would pass?
Ms.
Chairman, Representative Chesky, no, I haven't thought a lot about intra-city battles. I haven't considered that angle very much. Once again, Senator Bill's bill is much more inclusive. If that passes through there, you'll have, you know, you'll have more meat to chew here on this bill.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to bring it up. Again, I know I support this, and I don't know if you'll get where you want to go, but I think
either.
You should try. I just don't understand really how tagging it to somebody within 50 miles might change the implication of the bill.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, that the 50-mile portion is not included.
Okay.
That's taken out.
Representative Schroen's just showing that.
Now. Yeah, that we took that out. You know, to tag along a little bit with what you were saying, Eden Valley did have an area zone for these. Apparently you have to have a place where they can exist. Well, theirs was where there is no city sewer or water, which is kind of a natural detriment. they, again, just kind of, you know, snuck under the wire, because they weren't real upfront in what they were going to use this building for, which is in their a zoned area where, you know, it's business zoned.
Representative
Hosh. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to say thank you to Representative Erdahl for bringing this up. Both Representative Erdahl and I represent Eden Valley. I represent the half of the church, though. So, and I keep bringing that up. He's probably tired of hearing that. But, you know, I think this is important. I mean, we've had a history of this up in the St. Cloud area. Up in Benton County has spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to deal with adult business uses. One came in under the night of day that said it was a tax shop. You know, I think there needs to be some truth in advertising, and this is all this is doing. I think the city of Eden Valley, Representative Erdahl, know that you cannot prohibit or ban adult use businesses, but you should be able to plan for them and make sure that, you know, if one so chooses so to come into your community, that goes into the most appropriate spot. And this would allow that to happen. Our small towns do not have the resources, do not have the legal power, and do not have the advice of experts to deal with these issues beforehand in a lot of ways. And we've seen small towns overtaken, whether it's down in Mankato, we've seen it up a little further up north in Ripley with several cases of prostitution up there, actually, and now that's finally shut down. But there needs to be a chance to react and to be able to work with these businesses. I mean, they're definitely not working with the communities, and they're going under the night of day lying and being deceitful. So I hope everybody can support this. This should help our small communities.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Riddle, when you were presenting your bill, you used the word blight, adjective blight, to describe this in the community. And we actually, in our committee, had an amendment to the eminent domain bill when we were discussing the definition of blight to include these kinds of businesses, but that was taken out. I saw the latest engrossment in transportation finance on Thursday. That, and actually, members, a number of our amendments are not in that bill. I'd encourage you to look at the latest engrossment.
I wanted to. Interesting. It was a lot shorter when it got to transportation finance. But Representative Riddle, I mean, do you? Would you consider these types of businesses, you know, fair game? And you know, if a local community wanted to use eminent domain and maybe redevelop that area, would you consider this, should this be protected under private property rights, or do you think that there's a role for eminent domain? And then I have an idea for you in terms of moving this ahead. So,
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Chairman. Representative Hornstein, as a one who greatly admires Representative Holbrook and respects her decisions, and also am a co-author of the bill with Representative Johnson, I have sincere concerns again about the the private for private use takings, which is basically what this is, as abhorrent as the business may be. I guess if it's a matter of principle policy that you don't want to see this private for private, then I would, I guess I would not be in favor of it in that case in terms of eminent domain.
Okay. Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. I thought maybe, you know, helping us get that amendment back in might be a vehicle to get at some of the issues that you're dealing with. So thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Riddle.
Representative Horstein, it would make me inconsistent as a politician. We never want to be that.
Yeah. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in my recollection, my city did the same thing that Representative Lencheski is talking about, and we did it proactively, so we did it quite a long time ago. And there is a place for those businesses, and I think cities could get some help from the League of Minnesota Cities if they don't have the staff to take care of it. Neither did we, but we took care of it anyway, and they're very helpful in that regard. So cities are able to work on that.
Further discussion? Representative Holberg renews her motion that the DE1 amendment be adopted. And I believe this is to get it in order the author would like, basically. Pardon?
And to pass it. And to pass it.
Yep. We can't do two motions at once, Representative Holberg. You may be fast, but you can't do two motions at once. All those in favor of the DE1 motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. To that language, Representative Erdahl, on line 6, do you really need the word open? Seems a little redundant.
Well, where are my glasses? Are open. That line 6? Okay.
This guy's...
Perhaps there's a more way of putting
it, but
it's intended
to modify the clause open only for persons at least 18 years or older.
Okay. That's what I meant
to say. I thought that was a given by the first part of it, but okay. Thank you. Representative Holberg renews her motion that House Call 3779 be recommended to pass as amended and be sent to the General Register. Representative Hosh.
Just one quick question. When looking at this, it came from the last question. When it says open only to persons of 18 years old, of age or older, would that cause problems if a club were to say, well, we're going to be open to only people 21 or older? With the word only in it? I'm sorry for the delay.
At least.
At least.
At least. Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
Thank you, Representative Hosh. Any further discussion to that motion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The bill will be passed and sent to the General Register as amended.
Thank you very much, members.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Representative Hosh, before you go, members, I encourage you folks that haven't seen the language to get the language of the annexation bill. The task force language, Representative Hosh, I believe there was an oversight on line 18 of that language for your reference. Do you have it there? On line 18, under the Senate language for appointments to the task force, we had one from majority caucus and one from minority caucus, but that language does not exist in the House language. And I assume that was an oversight, and we would be asking that to be added. Is that correct? Okay. And members, I'll just tell you what's being discussed right now is trying to come up with some definition for developable land, and possibly on the 1920 cap, the 1920 acreage cap, to possibly requiring a percent of that to be already in, have plans for development. Because one of the complaints from the townships has been they take these great big chunks of acreage, but there's no plans for development whatsoever. And that's one of the reasons they were trying to reduce it. So I suggested that they discuss a possible requirement for a certain percent of that acreage to be in, have plans approved for development. So that's one thing being negotiated. We will, just a second here. Okay, we're going to recess the meeting till tonight. I'll announce on the floor if we're here, and if we don't need to meet, I'll just have to come back and adjourn the meeting.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Hornstein.
I just still have a procedural question. I mean, this is great. I mean, we kind of have everything summed up. It's ready to go. But you don't have a jacket, and there's no Senate companion. And
okay, the process. Thank you, Representative Hornstein. We do have jackets. I sign them as a committee bill, for a committee bill. They were submitted on Friday to make the deadline for bill introduction today.
Introduced today and referred to
the
committee.
You'll see the House phone number today. And it, because we did it this way, we did it for this reason, so it could go right to government operations.
Oh.
It's committed, it's introduced as a committee bill, and it goes right to government operations. And there was a hearing scheduled for tomorrow night in government operations.
Okay.
So the purpose of meeting tonight is if we get any additional agreement from the townships and cities, I wanted to be able to meet as a committee, and it won't take long, so I hope you'll come, because I really want to be able to meet as a committee and report to government operations that we have an agreement, and they'll take our amendment, and hopefully then we'll have townships as eager to support the bill as the cities, trying to get that consensus, because we were a little bit strong. We were missing Representative Garofalo and Representative Holberg, so we ended up with a little stronger city bill. Any other questions? Seeing none, we are recessed until 4:30 in room 10. This is Representative Mark Olson. I call the local government meeting for... What is it? March 27th, back to order. It's been a long day. I forgot the date from this morning. March 27th. And I trust you all remember the Hillstrom, what was it, a 10-minute bill, and we spent 45 minutes how we discovered a can of worms. And Representative Hillstrom announced that she had an amendment to possibly resolve it. So, Representative Hillstrom, will, now this went to the General Register, did it not? Okay. So we're going to take this up off the table, or take this up again. Representative Hillstrom moves that House Law 3452 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. And now you have an amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have the A1 amendment.
Okay. Representative Hillstrom moves adoption of the A1 amendment to get the bill in the order she would like it. Any questions on that amendment? She'll address us here in a moment to get it in the order the author would like. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Two-year amended bill, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As many of you remember, public land is not specifically defined on who has the ability to regulate. And so what we have done is we do repeal the ability for the county to do it. However, the amendment gives the lowest local unit of government the ability to regulate it first. So the township or the city, and then in the event they don't do that, it gives it back to the county. So the county would have the authority provided the township and the city did not make the decision to regulate.
And Representative Hillstrom, as far as the issues that that came out from our discussions with Representative Solberg in the last meeting, those issues will still have to be resolved.
Yes,
is that right?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The only way to resolve those issues most likely is through the court system, and it would be a very costly court battle to define what public land is. And we could, you know, ask the Attorney General to do it, but again, that would have budget impact, and it would not be in order at this point.
And Representative Hillstrom, as I understand it, this is an effort to make sure each unit of government has a chance at trying to work with this issue?
Correct, Mr. Chair. This is again, so that the lowest unit of government that has the property within its jurisdiction, they could regulate it first, and in the event they chose not to, it would go to the county.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hillstrom, your testifiers last time were quite outspoken about their concern about what happened with their property, as far as they're thinking that, you know, they should be able to have access to the lake and so forth and so on. Are they aware of your amendment? I would think that they are, and are they in approval of what you're bringing forward?
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, actually it was their suggestion to give it to the township first, because the township has been very open to working with them and discussing the issue, and so it was actually their idea to do the township first.
Hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Further discussion to the bill as amended? Seeing none. Representative Hillstrom renews her motion that House Bill 3452 be recommended to pass as amended and be sent to the General Register. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The bill is passed as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
As of now, members, we don't have the final issues resolved on the annexation matter. The area of contention is, as I noted earlier, the 1920 acreage limit with developable land. What I have encouraged them to do, as I listen to both sides, is I say come up with a definition for developable. The city's making the argument that, and which the townships are concerned of as well, that if we don't have the word developable in there, they will carve out things and leave off the swampland and things of that nature, and not have a contiguous, you know, uniform piece of property. So I said define developable so it can't be abused and go off into no man's land. And in addition to that, the townships have complained about proposing these annexations and not having any plans to do anything with it. I said come up with a basic percentage of that overall property to be annexed, and create a requirement for that to have some sort of plan in place, a preliminary plan, just like it already exists in another part of statute with regard to the string and bloom concept, where cities can go out into a township and annex a piece of property and just get an easement to it for the services. And for some reason, that's not working yet. But those are the kind of compromises that I've suggested they try to work out, and we don't yet have agreement on it. But those are some ideas that would mitigate their issues to some extent on either side. The city's expressed a willingness to do that. The township doesn't feel they have the support from their people to go to 1920, and they're discussing whether or not they just take that whole provision right out of the bill and go back to no limits. So they are wrestling with it. There's other issues yet to be addressed, as we all know from the discussions the other day, but that's the reason for the task force. But that's the main thing in the bill that's an issue. And that's what he did note. He said he was vehemently opposed to that when we put it in the bill. And I wish we'd had more time. I was thinking I should maybe stay longer, but I think we were at our limit. So anything anybody wants to do to contribute to getting the resolve, lobbying the lobbyists, go for it. Any other discussion, questions? Seeing none, I appreciate everybody's patience and diligence on that. We do have a bill out. I wish it was more balanced in support, and no disrespect intended. I wish our township people would have been here.
No bill's a good bill.
You're a city guy. I'm both. We need to get a consensus on this, and I hope we can still do it. So we'll be trying. Does anybody have any comments for me as to what to do in government operations if we don't have agreement on it? Any concerns you want identified? Representative Lanny.
I would hope that this agreement that we spent countless hours on would be honored by both sides. I think both sides did not get everything they had wanted or hoped for, and isn't that what the negotiation and compromise is all about? And, you know, we've been spinning our wheels on this issue for quite a few years now. Mm-hmm. And if people want to nitpick this to death, you run the risk of having the whole thing unravel. And I would hope that both sides would come to their senses and realize that we've wrestled with this enough. We've got a mechanism in the bill to deal with issues that still remain. Let that work. And I'm very frustrated that apparently for some that is not good enough, and that's very unfortunate.
Representative Lanning, I have voiced much of what you just conveyed to the parties, but I do have to acknowledge, as I have just a moment ago, that we did put a provision in that was vehemently opposed by the townships, and we did not and we did not do that for the cities. I mean, we did have, as admitted by Representative Marquardt, a double standard on that point. And I regret moving the bill and seeing if we couldn't spend more time and work it out, because once we let the bill out of the bag, so to speak, we lost a lot of negotiating ability with the parties. That's what I've learned from this, and I just felt we had to move on. We were all at our last hour, and I felt I had to do it because the bill had to pass, or we wouldn't have made deadline to get it into the process. But we, as a committee, we kind of lost our negotiating influence on the two parties to get them to agree. And going back in the committee, as I said, we had a double standard. We didn't accept anything from the cities that they vehemently opposed, and we did accept that provision from the townships that they did vehemently oppose and voiced that right there in the process. So I don't want to fault the townships, but I am pushing them to agree, and I just cited the two ways in which I personally feel we could agree to this, especially because we have a task force that's going to review it again. I even offered them, and I'll just throw this out so you all know what else is on the table. I offered them to take the two acreage provisions in the bill and put a sunset on it. It was just another idea. Put a sunset on it so that it would be sunsetted at the end of the session after the task force report would come in at the beginning of the session. So the task force would have to look at those issues, and we'd have an entire session to deal with the task force report, but it would be sunsetted. That was another thing I put on the table. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we need to keep in mind here that what we put in this consensus bill was changing unlimited acreage. And you know, the cities were trying to get 5,000 and 3,000 and 2,500, and they came down in their position all the way to this where we ended up. Mm-hmm. And it's not as if there wasn't substantial movement on the city's part. I think there was. Mm-hmm. We need to keep that in mind too, and compromise. You know, what we found here was some middle ground. Mm-hmm. And yes, I know the townships felt that it went further than they wanted, but the cities also feel the same way. This went down much further than they wanted.
Well, I'm open about all this because I want members to talk to lobby. I want you to lobby the lobbyists. Because I hope we can get some fruits of our labor and go forward with that and not have a big floor fight on this and hopefully get the Senate to agree to it. If we do get an agreement, Senator Higgins has told me she'd give it a hearing. Any other thoughts? Thank you for all your work and patience. God bless. Meeting's adjourned.